It's time for The Buzz on KFAR Radio. Brought to you by Good Titrations off Merhar Avenue. Home to the country's first cannabis cafe. Now it's time for The Buzz.
All right, welcome to The Buzz. You're with Sean Tackey and Brandon Emmett, my co-host.
Yo, yo.
And we're here to give you the lowdown on cannabis today. Basically, we're going to touch on some subjects on cultivation and how it's evolved over time and discuss also potency and other cannabinoids and terpenes that we can see in results and how customers go about buying things.
Yeah. So, as a lot of you guys know, cannabis has been around for a really long time. Cannabis cultivation, you know, it's one of the oldest agricultural crops. It was mostly a hash crop back in the day. It'd be interesting to see who the first person who stumbled upon, you know, some cannabis in the Hindu Kush Mountains, and whether they just thought it, you know, it smelled good like flowers, and so they brought it home, or they came upon a field that was burning and inhaled it, and it got them stoned, or what? But it's definitely been around for a long time.
How people end up deciding, oh, I'm gonna roll this up and smoke it, you know, yeah. Like tobacco as well. Like, how did you stumble across that? But
yeah,
it's interesting. But it's been around forever.
Yeah. Yeah, a long time. I mean, we know it's been around since, modern agriculture started. We think, you know, anywhere between 2,000 and 4,000 years ago, it started to really, you know, travel out of Asia and be cultivated around the planet. And then, you know, up in, you know, to medieval times, it's pretty much ubiquitous. Hemp was really popular for textile, and you know, there's references to cannabis in a lot of the Middle Eastern cultures and Africa and that sort of thing. So been around for quite a bit. And it was
even a law that you had to grow hemp when you first civilized in the United States.
Well, oh,
it was,
yeah,
in the United States at the time, but the colonies.
The colonies, yeah.
You're obligated to grow hemp because of the fiber purposes. So it's been around, and it's a great textile.
Yeah, I think there was something in George Washington's journal about having them separate the flowers from.
Really?
Yeah. So now he didn't make any reference to actually smoking bowls.
No, but.
But
it's interesting to think that he would have.
Yeah, seems like weed's been a gateway drug to the White House for a long time.
Right? So. How dare you open your mind?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it had been cultivated for a long time, just like any other agricultural crop. It was grown in rows and harvested, and a lot of the crop that was used for consumption was just for hash. People would take and would process either finger hash, or they take and dry it out like in Lebanon, where you beat it against screens, you right. Shake off as many trichomes as you can, yeah. You take that, you use that for hash, either for eating or cooking or smoking, and then everything else went to a textile. And then as cannabis became more and more ubiquitous as a drug, cultivation techniques started to change. You know, people right. started growing it specifically for its cannabinoid content.
And not
just for the fibers, yeah. And then, especially after cannabis became illegal, people really started changing up the way they were growing it, because you had to get the most amount of bud and flower that you could out of
the space that you had.
Out of the space that you had, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could totally see how the genealogy and phenotypical selections change too, because it's not, hey, here's like a huge hemp stock, which when you go and look at hemp fields, it's just like huge stalks of corn with nothing on them, right, basically, compared to, oh, these ones are grown specifically just to produce as much of a flower as you can get.
Yeah, that's like some of the old like Linnaean drawings about cannabis. The plant was really wispy and had very few buds on it. Even the ones, you know, when they decided that, okay, we're going to separate this into two species, you know, the genus cannabis, but then there's cannabis sativa and cannabis indica. Even the shorter, bushier indicas were still kind of scraggly looking in a lot of these old drawings. And so now you look at cannabis plants and you see sativas that are built like, you know, the Incredible Hulk. And then indicas, which look like a dumpster almost, you know, just short, squatty, super dense. Yep. And a lot of that is the product of these selective breeding programs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can even see it in the choice, because between the two species, like sativa doesn't typically bear as much weight. And so that makes a huge decision for growers, and especially, you know, people that were doing it in the black market beforehand. But now people that are doing it as a business, like a lot of them are culling their sativa strains because they just don't yield nearly as much product.
Yeah, and that's, you know, interesting. So back during the drug war, you saw a lot of indicas on the market, a lot of OG Kush, a lot of just Kush of all kinds, because, you know, per square unit area, it yields a lot more. And so you saw a lot more of these skunky strains. You don't see as much of that anymore. I think a lot of stuff these days are hybrids. But people were trying to get the most bang for their buck out of what they were growing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it also changes too, because the way laws are crafted and how they would want to grow them as well, right? So I mean, when you get slapped on the hand, you know, or Uncle Sam comes to get you, and it's based on the number of plants you have.
Yeah, that's a big deal. So having a high plant count could have been the difference between a slap on the wrist and going to prison. I remember back in the day, it was 99 plants. It's actually, you know, the number was 100, but so.
Right, so everyone would grow 99?
Anything under 99 plants was generally just state law, right?
Gotcha.
But then when you rose to the level of over 99 plants, so if you had 100 plants, that's say hello to the DEA if you get caught. Oof. You know, and so that's how, say, the troopers came and busted somebody, they count up the plants, and, you know, they'd always ratchet out to the feds. But a lot of times, depending on how busy the feds were, they say, okay, well, did they have 99 plants or not? And it's no, like, okay, well, then, you know, you're going to deal with your state DA versus going to club fed for a little while. So
so that definitely changes growing patterns then. I mean, you go with large monocrops and stuff rather than more economical, like Sea of Green methodology.
Yeah, I remember watching Hans's Sea of Green on VHS back in the 90s, and it was awesome, but it was like terrifying. The guy had hundreds and hundreds of plants growing in like a converted double wide trailer, and it looked awesome. I'm like, man, an entire crop of tops, that would be amazing. And he never said how many plants he had, but you could kind of count them up in the video as he's doing it. Guy probably had 400, 500 plants. It's like terrifying. Well, it's like, well.
They probably count clones too.
Exactly. I was like, well, there's no way I'm doing that. You know, and he was, you know, I think he was doing this in Amsterdam, where it had been quasi-legal for a long time.
Right.
But, you know, I took some of the knowledge from Hans's Sea of Green, which Hans, if you're out there listening to us, you're a big hero. But he was kind of I don't know if he was the father of Sea of Green, but he was certainly the first person who was like teaching it to the masses, putting out these VHSs and sending them across the ocean, you know?
Here you go.
Yeah.
Send these to the head shops.
Yeah, but what you used to see a lot of was very large plants, but smaller plant counts. Like even in Oregon after 1996 or 98, when medical became a thing, you could still only have so many plants, so much per patient, you know?
I mean, it's still the case, too, even here in Alaska. I mean, if you're trying to grow your own stuff at your own house, you're only allowed to have 6 plants. So you are going off a plant count as well.
Exactly.
And so your urge would be to grow a bigger one if you...
Yeah, that's where, you know, the growing technique Scrog became popular. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll see in a lot of these forums, like people talking about Scrogging, and Scrogging's great. But really only...
Can you explain Scrog?
Yeah, so Scrog is screen of green. So you take the low plant count technique,
mm-hmm.
but then you also spread a screen out over your canopy, and you put these plants underneath of it, and then you train the plants through the canopy to then maximize your number of tops. So it's like you're recreating that situation where you have maximized your canopy space, but you're using a screen and you're keeping your plant number low. So it
also helps support them, right? So once they start bearing
exactly,
all that weight,
and it helps support them. Yeah, especially if you train your plant out horizontally, they're not going to be able to hold all those big colas. Yeah, so Scroggin was really popular, and it still is amongst a lot of home growers. Like, okay, well, I only want to deal with, you know, three or four plants or something
exactly.
like that. So,
I mean, it's still actually kind of a technique now. I mean, even a lot of cultivations that we visit, you know, use screens.
And, well, yeah, a lot of cultivators. I mean, ourselves, you know, a bunch of the cultivators we know, they use screens, but they're really just for a support.
Maintenance.
They're there to keep your, you know, if you have, you know, some really
Typically training them out when they're real young to actually have a bunch of tops like that.
No. So like take our grow, for example, or other grows that are similar. For the size of the grow, we've got tons of plants. We pretty much skip the veg stage. So in the day, that would have been really unheard of to grow that many plants in that small area because you could get in a lot of trouble. But now that as long as you've got your plants tagged and Big Brother knows exactly how many plants you have and where they came, you know, from seed to sale, you can have as many as you want. And so it's advantageous now to actually do a Sia Green because you can really, you know, churn out the number of harvests. You have your mamas, and then you have your clones, and then an ultra short green phase, veg phase.
Right.
And then everything goes straight to flower. And that's so, and touching on the strain thing, which is interesting, us and some other similar growers actually having a lot of those really dope sativa strains that you don't see a whole lot of is because of having a method where we're relying on single stock plants, and so we don't have to worry about them stretching. So a lot of guys that grow indoors don't grow sativas because you veg your plant out and then you put it into flower and it shoots up and gets crazy tall. But if you're using really small plants, but a lot of them, you can actually use that stretch in your flowering phase, much like a green phase.
And if you don't let them veg long enough, then they're not going to have nearly as much stretch in the flowering, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So that makes it a little easier to actually like churn sativa strains out faster, and not nearly take as much space up, not spend all its energy on stretching as much. I mean, it's going to stretch no matter what, but if you don't give it as much time in the veg state to grow and build that up.
Yeah, it won't. Yeah, so like a lot of indicas will only stretch between 0.5 and, you know, one times their original height. So you put in an indica that's 8 inches tall, it might only be 16 inches tall when it flowers, but you can take some of these more sativa-like strains, put them in at 8 inches tall, and they'll stretch three times in that 8 weeks. So
it's crazy.
Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons why places where you can grow outdoors and you can have really big plants, you do see a lot of sativas.
They're not concerned about height above it, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, you can get a ghost train haze that's 20 feet tall, you know.
I've seen some pretty wild pictures.
Yeah, which we've got some pretty killer sativas at Good Titrations right now. You know, we got a lot of fruit strains. We've got Mandarin Cookies number 4.
Yeah,
we've
and
got
number 2.
Yeah, and number 2. Yeah, the number 2 might not make it. It's great smoke, but it just doesn't stretch nearly as much.
Exactly.
It's probably about time for a break.
It actually is. And just a reminder, you're listening to KFAR 97.5 FM and 660 AM and streaming live at KFARradio.com. And we're going to take a quick commercial break. Be right back.
More of the buzz will continue right after this.
Since legalization, Good Titrations has been producing the finest products that you now enjoy legally with products throughout the state of Alaska. Well, now Good Titrations has their own retail store right here in Fairbanks at 506 Merhar Avenue, just off the Johansson, a full cannabis retail shop, including products in flower, edible, and concentrate form, plus accessories and an impressive group of bud tenders that can help match the right product just for you. And coming soon, Fairbanks' first cannabis cafe, courtesy of Good Titrations off Merhar Avenue. Online at goodtitrations.com. License number 10827.
Marijuana has intoxicating effects and may be habit-forming and addictive. Marijuana impairs concentration, coordination, and judgment. Do not operate a vehicle or machinery under its influence. There are health risks associated with consumption of marijuana. For use only by adults 21 and older, keep out of reach of children. Marijuana should not be used by women who are pregnant or breastfeeding.
This message is brought to you by Good Titration.
License number 20827.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Now, back to The Buzz on KFAR Radio, brought to you by Good Titrations.
All right, welcome back to The Buzz. Sean Tackey here and Brandon Abbott.
Yo, yo.
And we're just going over some cultivation techniques and how things have changed. And we were highlighting just a little bit ago about how they stretch and whatnot. But now that people have licenses where they can have as many plants as they want, so they can do more of a sea of green mentality, it's kind of changed the way that it gets cultivated some. So
yeah, it's changed a lot of the growing technique, especially, you know, here in Alaska, where it's very difficult to grow outdoors. It's super difficult to grow big plants outdoors. It's just not warm enough. And right. So you do see a lot of indoor. I've toured people's grows. I've seen some interesting attempts at growing really big plants, and they can do it, but I don't think they're maximizing their canopy space. Now, that's not to say you've got to do a hydro sea of green.
Right.
But at the same time, I think some people have tried to bring this, you know, like organic and or just outdoor growing style inside, and they struggle with a lot of the issues that are associated with outdoor growing and with growing large plants.
Yeah. And I mean, also customers, you know, choices. Well, I was going to talk about potency and testing too. I wanted to highlight on.
Oh yeah.
And like, I mean, customers always driven by numbers. I mean, you take whatever is given to you to measure things, right? You're like, look at how many calories are in this. What's the alcohol content on that? Like, you take all those things into consideration. So a lot of people just naturally flock to THC potency, even though that might not give them the best result that they're actually looking for.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's one thing that has baffled me, because back in the day when you were selecting cannabis that you didn't grow your own, you know, there was right. there was bag appeal. And so growers would compete with one another on a few qualities. One, the overall quality of the cannabis and how dry the harvest was. You know, people hate wet bags. That was
oh, yeah, well, big, exactly.
No. But so if you had really good smoke that was dried out well and not too dry, people say, okay, that's more value because I don't have to dry this out on the dash of my car or the microwave or whatever, you know, which I may or may not have done that a couple times when I was younger. And then people looked at the nug density and structure. Can they see visible seeds? Can they not? And then the smell. And then ultimately the smoke. Did it get them stoned? Was it a pleasant experience? And now with a lot of these regulations that we have, some of which I think are quite onerous.
Well, yeah.
Testing is key.
Totally.
Testing is bogus, in my opinion, unless you're testing for pesticides, heavy metals, which you don't do, which we touched on that a little bit in a previous
subject.
Show.
Yeah.
But people will look up the screen and they'll say, okay, I want the highest tester you got, or I want to try to get the highest test for the least amount of money. And so they'll look and say, okay, these are, you know, 25, 22, 21. And it seems like 20 is really that magic number to get a premium price.
Yeah.
Under 20, not so much. But what's interesting is you take some strains like our Mandarin Cookies 4, which is some of the best smoke out there. And it's the highest we've ever got to test was 18, but it's got really good terpenes. And so trying to educate the consumer that it's not all about test results is sort of an ongoing struggle.
Yes.
Not just for us, but for the industry as a whole.
Exactly. Trying to explain to customers the entourage effect, right? You know, that there's so many different terpenes that are grown, that come out. I mean, that's part of the reason people actually selected their bud before on smell.
Smell, yeah.
It would be a huge factor. Terpenes actually give it a lot of that aroma and the fragrance, but it also completely contributes to the way that they're going to feel. I mean, you get something with high, you know, beta-mercene in it, you're going to end up having that couch lock effect. You're gonna into couch.
Into couch.
Yep.
Sativa, also into couch, but there's aliens and they're watching you.
It's way more intense about it. Oh, man. Can't move now, but I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, Arnie to come around the corner, you know. So that is really important, is that entourage effect, getting people to learn about the entourage effect. And there's a lot of scholarly journal articles about different terpenes, not just cannabinoid
terpenes, yeah,
but just terpenes in general. And cannabis is interesting because it has so many terpenes that are found in other plants, and a lot of these terpenes have had extensive studies done on them. And like you said, beta-mercene will give you that couch lock, you know, linalool will give you that sort of couch lock effect,
limonene.
Which limonene, yeah.
It'll give you that uplifting effect, just like sniffing a bottle of Pine Sol kind of a thing. Just like it's kind of sprung up.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where a lot, like, the difference between sativa and indica really lies, actually, especially with so many strains being hybrids now, isn't just in their growth characteristics, but it's in the terpenes. You know, sativas generally have more terpenes that act like central nervous stimulants, uppers, mm-hmm, whereas a lot of sativas have more terpenes that act like downers.
I think you got that flipped right. Sativa would be the upper one, right?
Oh, and yeah, yeah, yeah. Duh.
Yep, no, but exactly. So that's so true.
Stoners do a radio show.
Right.
Yeah, so sativa, uplifting, you know.
Indica,
or is more of that chill.
Mellow chill factor.
Yeah, and like linalool, that is the active compound in lavender. And so for centuries, people have used lavender essential oils to chill out.
Yeah, relax, well, pretty bedtime thing.
It turns out that linalool actually has some calming effects.
We got like an essential oils person on here to talk about all these things.
Dude,
too.
That's a really, yeah. So anyone out there in radio land that's super into essential oils and terpenes.
And understands them, wants to talk
about it. Yeah, he wants to talk about it. We should follow up on that one. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, and like that's the thing. I don't think people realize how common terpenes really are. So I mean, like, yeah, it's in lavender, but like even the zest of an orange and stuff, like the actual aspect of using zesting like that for cooking is for that terpene flavor that's in there.
Yeah, limonene, citral,
yep,
all of those different terpenes that are in citrus fruits generally have that sort of uplifting effect to them. So.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's a big factor now that, you know, because everyone can have test results, that's another focus. So people aren't just staring at THC content or total cannabinoid content, but they're also looking to see where the terpene results are, and everyone's trying to get to that coveted above 3%, you know, terpene level in their cannabis plant, because I mean, a lot of people are chasing after the flavor now more so than just the THC.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important. You know, people say, okay, well this plant may only have produced 18-19%, but it's got a 2.97 on the terpenes, and they lean heavily to one side or the other. Like, okay, maybe I'll select that one versus that 30%er that
has like none,
has, you know? 0.5 terpenes or something like that. Like, yeah, this is gonna, you know,
give you a whole other effect, and a lot of times it's a lot better. Like, there's sometimes when I'll grab like a 15% tested result, you know, and with a high terpene, and I'll get a way stronger effect, longer lasting, usually better experience than when I grab something that's really high THC and no terpenes. I typically are just short, spinny, quick.
Yeah, THC by itself is just a really racy high. I mean, it's a fantastic medicine, but just for getting stoned, only THC can just be, you know, a little of that odd sort of feeling, like, okay, I'm stoned, but I don't really have those other cerebral effects with it.
That's right, yeah.
So I like on concentrate side, like straight diamonds are cool.
Yeah, I was just about to bring that
but
up.
But they're not nearly as popular as diamonds with sauce, because that has the terpenes.
There's all the actual flavor and stuff. Exactly. Everyone wants to partake in that 99%er just to see what it's like, but then they're like, well, this is not really for me, a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, it's quick and it's racy. So
what, here in our last couple of minutes, Sean, what are some of your favorite strains?
Oh, my favorite strains? I really like Sour Diesel. I like lean towards the sativas typically, because I don't like to be couch locked as much as others do. So yeah, Sour Diesel, that was one that has been around for a while. You know, we've been partaking in that since before we started this business. And
you can find some of that grown by Boreal.
I think so. I think he still has some out, and we have some on our menu, actually, if I'm not mistaken. That and the mandarin cookies, that's obviously one of the go-tos.
That's such a we stumbled on that seed, and it's just been awesome.
It has
been doesn't
great.
Test great, but man, it's super easy to grow, and it tastes amazing, sells well, even without an awesome test result. It yields well. Yeah, we really lucked out getting that mandarin cookies.
That one, and then pretty much anything that's got like kind of lemon in the name, you know, and then hazes, like, fond of those too.
Yeah, the hazes are really good. Yeah, I remember growing some Ghost Train haze back in the day, and that was some really good smoke. You know, this was back before testing results. I would have liked to see what that tested out at, but it smelt amazing.
I think we have some Ghost Train haze from Boreal as well, if I'm not mistaken. I think he was
Really?
Yeah.
He got some? Okay.
I thought we had some. I'll double check that. But how about you? What about you? What's your favorite?
So I'm an indica leaning toker. I love the Kushes, and I love skunky strains. I love stuff that has a lot of linalool, a lot of myrcene in it. You know, I'm the kind of person, I'm naturally just sort of jumping out of my shoes all the time. And so having something that kind of mellows me out is my favorite. You know, I really like the just old school skunk indica afghanica kind of strains, which again you don't see as many of those, but
I definitely enjoy those as well, especially when it's like time to relax and just I'm like, all right, I'm here just to sit down and watch Grandma's Boy.
Popping Grandma's Boy.
Like, get me some Frankenstein. That's how he used to actually sell weed back then, was just give it a name.
It's like, oh, what's this? Okay, we'll call it this, you know? Which is, I think some growers still do that. But
I think so, too. I think a lot of names just change on the whim occasionally on the rec market as well, but... Yeah, no, the naming system's pretty hilarious, and that would be top 10 movie for sure, is Grandma's Boy, just because of some of those references, like pterodactyl, Frankenstein.
Like, I forgot to trim my antlers.
Exactly. Actually, we are coming to the end of our show, so you've been listening to The Buzz on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live on KFARradio.com. We're the heartbeat of Alaska. To hear this show again or any other past episodes, go to the archives page at KFARradio.com. And please stick around for Health Talk with Dr. Looper after this.
You've been listening to The Buzz on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com. Sponsored by Good Titrations. To listen to this episode or any past programs, simply go to the website and search the archives page. The Buzz has been a production of Last Frontier Media Active.